From KMXT in Kodiak, it's the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Terry Haynes.
Statewide support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by Satellite Technical Services, authorized distributor for the ACR Bivy Stick, a small two-way satellite communicator. Dealers can be found at satellitewest.com or by calling 206-321-6896.
After a challenging year in 2020, chum salmon returned to the top of the list of Southeast Alaska's most valuable hatchery-produced fish in 2021. Coho or silver salmon were a distant second. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this update from last week's regional aquaculture meeting in Sitka.
Hatchery chum salmon are so valuable to Southeast Alaska's salmon fisheries that they're not even on the same chart as the four other species. Based on preliminary estimates, chum were worth about $25 million to the commercial fisheries in 2021, out of a total $31 million for all hatchery-produced species. Flip Pryor is the aquaculture section chief for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He led the department's twice-yearly regional planning team meeting in Sitka in the first week in April. The rebound in 2021 is in part a function of the market during the lockdown in 2020, but there are other factors that are less well understood. Trollers, for example, landed nearly $5 million worth of chum in 2021, their second best year, even though the hatchery chum return has been generally larger over the past decade. Chum, compared to kings and coho, don't always strike troll gear with much enthusiasm, but sometimes they do.
This was one of the years the fish were really biting. The chum were biting when they were coming in, and that's not always the case. There's some years they simply don't bite. They come in deep and they aren't hitting hooks, basically. And so the trollers don't do so well. And this year, they did really well.
There are a few theories about the will-they or won't-they behavior of chum, but no research. Pryor says a best guess is food availability at sea as chum return to spawn, and whether the fish are satiated or hungry when they're intercepted by trollers. It could be that simple. What's not especially simple is managing around it. A large forecast for hatchery chum in any given year can raise the troll fleet's hopes, but it doesn't always pan out.
You know, one year it's way up, and the next year it's way down. It's like, okay, how do you how do you manage that? And it's just something that you got to do in season, and it's just one of those weird things you have to deal with.
As good as 2021 was for chum, it was still below all the pre-pandemic years as far back as 2010, and it was less than half the record years of 2018 and 2012, when hatchery chum were worth almost $63 million. Seiners and gillnetters catch most of those fish and get proportionately more value for them. Trollers, however, do get considerably more value for kings and coho than the net fleets. After chum, coho were the second most valuable hatchery salmon in Southeast in 2021, worth about $4 million, with trollers taking almost 90% of that value. Hatchery kings came in at around $800,000 for trollers, and far less for seiners and gillnetters. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted, hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. For more information, call 1-907-235-4966 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The commercial herring fishery in Sitka Sound wrapped up Sunday, April 10th, with its largest harvest on record. The Sacro fishery had daily openings all week, with the last one on Sunday. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game estimates the catch totaled over 26,000 tons, over half this year's guideline harvest level. That beats the previous record for the fishery from 2011, when the fleet caught over 19,000 tons. Fishing started on March 26th. The herring are caught for their roe, and that's processed in Petersburg and other southeast communities and sold in Japan. The fishery did not open in 2019 and 2020 because the fish were too small for buyers. Last year's catch was just over 15,000 tons. This year, Fish and Game has reported herring spawning along more than 74 nautical miles of coastline around Sitka Sound. Meanwhile, herring are also spawning further south near Prince of Wales Island. A Rowan kelp fishery opened near Craig on March 17th. Fishermen have been given extra time to transfer fish into pounds or floating net pens where the herring lay their eggs on the kelp. During an aerial survey Sunday, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game reported over 26 nautical miles of active spawn in that area. Managers say herring have been placed in most of the 65 pounds. They're released after laying eggs. Both herring stocks are strong this year because of big numbers of six-year-old fish born in 2016. Thanks to KFSK's Joe Vicknicki for that story.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Supporters of mariculture in Alaska are working to build a $100 million industry out of shellfish and seaweed over the next two decades. They're meeting up at the University of Alaska's Mariculture Conference in Juneau this week to talk about how to get there. The Juneau Economic Development Council is hosting the conference. Executive Director Brian Holst said, mariculture is a good long-term investment for the state.
It is an industry that's sustainable for Alaska and can create jobs in not just in communities, not just in places like Juneau, but in rural areas throughout Southeast.
The University of Alaska is sponsoring the three-day event. President Pat Pitney said the university is all in on mariculture.
This incredible once-in-a-lifetime opportunity has to be balanced with a sense of responsibility. The urgency needs to be balanced with equity. And so the real challenge that's before us is figuring out how to do things better than we've done them in the past.
The university is developing academic programs in mariculture for its undergraduates and now offers a master's in marine policy in a partnership between the University of Alaska Fairbanks and the University of Alaska Southeast. Julie Decker directs the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, a nonprofit that supports fisheries. She says mariculture is a good way to grow seafood opportunities in the state.
This incredible once-in-a-lifetime opportunity has to be balanced with a sense of responsibility. The urgency needs to be balanced with equity. And so the real challenge that's before us is figuring out how to do things better than we've done them in the past.
Over the next decade, $32 million in mariculture research money will be coming into the state from the settlement from the Exxon Valdez oil spill. An additional $50 million could come from the federal government and $25 million in matching funds from the state. Thanks to KTOO's Claire Strimple for that report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from Madsen, providing twice-weekly service to Alaska's Emerald Isle.
There's a new pint-sized exhibition on display at Kodiak's downtown brewery. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, the Kodiak Maritime Museum's exhibition is called Water Hall and features art inspired by and for the commercial fishing industry.
Katie Birch is an artist from Homer. She's been an Alaska commercial fisherman for more than 3 decades with her family in Bristol Bay. She says the term water haul refers to a net that comes up empty, but there's also a more somber parallel.
In the area that I've been set netting, it seems like someone drowns, not quite every year, but almost every year, unfortunately. And so a lot of times with our set net skiffs and that, we're looking for the body, basically.
Birch created 11 small-scale dioramas for the show. They're filled with knickknacks and built out of fishing paraphernalia, like empty extra-tough boxes and a gutted single-sideband radio. And in each one, skeletons are dressed in rain gear, laughing and sharing stories on the dock. Birch says some of her inspiration comes from the Mexican tradition known as Día de los Muertos, or Day of the Dead, when families leave out drinks and food for deceased family members in hopes that they'll visit. Birch says her work is similarly crafty and whimsical, and it's a way to celebrate the fishermen that don't make it home.
If you got one day to come back to Earth, like, where would you go? What would you do? And I just imagine myself, the fisherman, being like, oh, I just want to go back to the cannery bunkhouse and play crib with my old friend Johnny, you know, or I just want to get on the flying bridge and get a fish call.
Water Hall was exhibited back in December of 2020 at a gallery in Homer. Birch says a lot of people didn't get to see it because of COVID. This time, the Kodiak Maritime Museum is showing her work at Kodiak Island Brewery on Lower Mill Bay Road. Birch says she's hoping others in the fishing community will have a chance to see it.
That's the audience I would most want. I just feel like Kodiak is a great place for this art just because, you know, I'd like fishermen to see it.
Water Hall is on display through the end of May. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund in recognition of the fishing industry, which provides over 58,000 Alaskan jobs from a renewable source.
The North Pacific Fishery Management Council is considering changing the way it does business in a number of ways. Some of the changes it is pondering are obviously in response to the experience of doing business virtually during the COVID-19 pandemic. On the table are conducting 1 to 2 meetings a year entirely online in the future, and to continue to allow official testimony virtually. The latter seems a no-brainer. The ability to testify remotely has allowed the participation of commenters that would have not been able to do so in the past, sometimes to the consternation of the council. This is a good thing. And holding some meetings virtually might make sense, too, depending on the actions and issues before the council at a given meeting. But despite the expense of time and travel to attend meetings personally, face-to-face interactions with regulators can never be replaced by chat rooms. One thing seems certain, though, the post-COVID process of the North Pacific Management Council will be different.